So all the churches all over the world but those two? Okay, where's Asia?
Turkey.
What part of Turkey?
Western
Turkey. Where's John when he's writing to him? Where's Patmos? Where? Island off what coast? Turkey. So he's writing to churches that are not too far away from where he is, right? What else does he have in common with them?
Tribulation,
or some translations will say suffering. Okay. The kingdom, yeah, they're sharing the kingdom. And if we want to go down that road, he's sharing with them in tribulation / suffering. He's sharing with them in the kingdom, and he's sharing with them in the endurance. Some Bibles say patience, but having to go through all of this. So, let's just real quickly do this. Chapter 1, who appears to John, tells him to write to these seven churches. In what chapters do we find the messages to the seven churches? What chapters? What?
2 and 3.
Good. Jesus said, I want you to write the things that are and the things that are hereafter. The things that are, you see in chapters 2 and 3, the condition of those seven churches. Where does the things that are hereafter start to be discussed? Chapter 4. You'll see that phrase in chapter 4, verse 1. And it begins, first of all, with a vision of God on his throne that we talked about last week. Some of our young men helped us get the picture. It's very similar to a picture in what Old Testament passage?
Ezekiel.
What's the phrase in the Old Testament that we see repeatedly talking about this kind of a, to use a big word, theophany, or an appearance of God? What's the phrase that we see in the Old Testament? It doesn't say theophany. It says the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And so John sees this magnificent vision in chapter 4 that represents God on his throne. And I want to just tie in one thing here. We talked a lot about the similarity between the vision of the glory of the Lord that John saw and the vision that Ezekiel saw. We briefly mentioned the one in Isaiah that Isaiah saw in chapter 6. In the lesson for last week, there was a question, what similarities do you see between Revelation 4 and Isaiah 6? There's one in particular I hope somebody would mention. Say what? Yeah, okay, there's another one. It's something that he doesn't see, but he hears. Oh, that's afterwards. That's after he sees this vision of God. Then there's this discussion, whom can we send? And Isaiah says, here am I, send me. And he says, go to a people who and preach to them that seeing they may not see and hearing they may not hear and so on. But there's something that Isaiah hears in Isaiah 6. And we holy, holy, holy. And you see that also in Revelation, the 4th chapter. All right, so Revelation, the 4th chapter, is really just setting the scene. Setting the scene for what? It's the magnificent scene of God on his throne. But it's setting the scene for what that we come to in chapter 5?
Judgment.
And that judgment is it's concealed in a what?
Scroll.
And for us to find out what that judgment is, what has to happen? Scroll has to be opened. So that gets us to where we have it on screen here. In question number 10, in whose hand was the scroll?
Jesus.
Him who's on the throne. Yeah. And what prevented the scroll from being opened?
Seven seals.
What's a seal? What's a seal? Could be wax, could be clay, but it was... It's also a signature. It's used for different things in the Bible. It can be a signature. It can be a seal that literally seals something closed. Its purpose can be to keep something closed. Its purpose can be for authentication. Gorilla tape. There you go. I'm not sure that's what it was, but all right. So draw a picture of a sealed scroll. This is kind of where we got to last week. These are a couple of artist representations of a sealed scroll. Can you focus me, Clint? Okay. All right, so here you have a scroll that has seven seals. And you would see it's tied around, and on that string tying it around, there's this seal pressed. And you can see you can't really open that scroll and see what's in it unless that seal is broken. And here's another one. And the difference between these two representations is the second one, you can see how you could open one seal, and it looks like you could unroll the outer layers of this scroll. And then you could open the next one from the right, the second one from the right, you could unroll more of the scroll. I don't know that they ever did it like that. I don't know if that's just some artist's representation of a way that you could have multiple seals and open it a little bit at a time. Or what? Yes. That is right. That is right. And all I'm saying is I don't know if we should picture the one on the left and you break the seal and you can pull back a corner and you can see a little bit, or if they actually did it like on the right. I don't know that. But I do know this. Gaius is a guy who was a law expert in the second century. And we're not going to have to read all of this, but basically I'll read the first part. He's talking about wills. However, wills which in the beginning were not legally executed. Somebody wrote a will and they didn't do it right, wasn't legally executed. Or if they were legally executed afterwards, became void, or were revoked, are still not absolutely inoperative. For if they've been sealed with the signets of seven witnesses, the appointed heir can demand possession of the estate in accordance with the provisions of the will, provided the deceased testator was a Roman citizen, and his own master at the time of his death. But, and it goes on, blah, blah, blah. But what I want you to catch is that reference to having been sealed with the signets of seven witnesses. So there's an example there, multiple seals on one document. So it happened. All right, that's enough of that. Question number 13. Let's read a little bit. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 5 and read. So we're going to start Revelation chapter 5, and I guess I'll just start in verse 1. I saw in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within on... I'm sorry, I'm going to read from the New American Standard. I keep forgetting that's what I want to do here. Revelation chapter 5 and verse 1. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a book written inside and on the back, sealed up with seven seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the book and to break its seals?" And no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open the book or to look into it. And I began to weep greatly because no one was found worthy to open the book or to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, "Stop weeping. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has overcome so as to open the book and its seven seals." From lion from the tribe of Judah, root of David. Root of David, what does that suggest?
Descendant
of the family of David, from the same stock as David. And in fact, he's a descendant of David. And then it says he's overcome. What's he overcome? All right. Verse 6. I saw between the throne with the four living creatures and the elders a lamb standing as if slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he came and he took it out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken the book, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the lamb, having each one a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are prayers of the saints. I'm going to mention something I had never thought of until just now. I'm just going to mention this in passing. We often ask the question, why this number, why that number in the book of Revelation? Why 144,000 that we're going to talk about in chapter 7? Why 24 elders? Joe Works made this observation, and you know what? I think there may be some merit to it. There were I've got to remember how this works. Do you remember John the Baptist's father, Zechariah, comes to perform his duty in his course? How many courses were there? It's either 12 or 24. I think it's 24. And they each had 2 weeks, each course had 2 weeks out of the year. And what was he doing? He was going into the temple to do what? Burn incense. Burn incense to the altar of incense. It's beside the altar of incense where he sees this vision of this angel who tells him, you're going to have a son. So he made the observation here that you've got 24 elders, you've got that number, and it's connected with this phrase, each one having golden bowl full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. I don't know, but it sounds as likely a connection as any that these 24 elders are being connected with a priestly idea. Verse 9, they sang a new song, saying, worthy art thou to take the book and to break its seals, for thou wast slain, and its purchase for God with thy blood, men of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. And thou hast made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they will reign upon the earth. Who are they saying that to? Who are they saying that to? The Lamb. And who is the Lamb? Who? Jesus. Verse 11, and I looked and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne and the living creatures and the elders, and the number of them was myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing. And every created thing which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth and on the sea and all things in them I heard saying, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and dominion forever and ever. And the four living creatures kept saying, amen. And the elders fell down and worshiped. Let's get one more verse. And I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying. So, now we're going to get into the action where the things that are to happen, quote, hereafter, after chapters 2 and 3, are going to be described. We said chapter 4 was setting the scene. Actually, chapters 4 and 5 were setting the scene. They're setting the scene of the Lamb who's worthy to open the seals. And he's opening the seals, and as he opens each one, there's a revelation, a bit of information about what's coming. What's coming? What was the phrase that we saw over and over to each of the seven churches at the end? To him that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches. And then there was another phrase at the end of each one of those. To him that conquers or overcomes. So they're going through suffering. They're going through tribulation. They've got to overcome. What's the assurance that they're going to overcome? That they're going to have a victory? That's what we're about to see. Okay? All right. Comments up to this point?
I have a question.
Yes. I think he is, let me go back. Yeah, he took it would be Jesus the Lamb.
Okay.
He's deity.
Right.
Out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne, I would take that to be God the Father sitting on the throne.
Okay.
I don't know how else to take that. You just had the picture in chapter 4. Now, the confusing part here is, the one sitting on the throne is associated with Yahweh or the Lord in the Old Testament, which is God comprehensive, which includes the Lamb, which includes the Son.
If you look back at verse 6, it says, I saw a Lamb standing. And then it says, and he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who sits on the throne.
Right.
Jesus Lamb
right.
Standing, and he took the
scroll
from the one sitting on the throne.
So, So you, and what I'm getting at is, you know, in the Old Testament, there's this idea that there is one God. And that's still true in the New Testament. But when we get to the New Testament, we see God revealed in Father, Son, and Spirit. I'm not sure to what extent we're supposed to understand that to be an intrinsic distinction for all eternity, or to what extent we're supposed to understand that's a distinction that has been made for the sake of the scheme of redemption. I don't know that I need to know the answer to that. But it becomes a little confusing when we think of there's one God and he sits on the throne, and then we get to a vision like this, and it seems like, well, Jesus seems to be separate from that. But Jesus was separate in the sense that he came and lived as a man upon the earth. So there's a distinction made between Father and Son and Spirit in the process of accomplishing the scheme of redemption, if that makes sense. And that's what's reflected here. Because this, Jesus is pictured as a lamb that's been slain. So he's being pictured in his role as the one who was the sacrifice. The Father wasn't the sacrifice. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Now, question number 13. Jesus is the one who is worthy to open the scroll. In chapters 6 through 11, we will see the seven seals removed one by one. And as they're removed, coming judgments will be revealed. These judgments are on those who dwell on the earth. Look at chapter 6 and verse 10. This is when the fifth seal is opened. And John sees, we've already talked about this passage, he sees those who have been slain in verse 9 crying out. And what are they crying out according to verse 10? How long till what? Judge who? Judge whom? Those who dwell on the earth. Upon those who dwell on the earth. What impression do you get about those who dwell on the earth? They're worldly people. What relationship did they have to do with these who were slain? They slew them. They're the killers. You can look at chapter 8 and verse 13, but in a moment we're going to see a whole list of passages where this phrase is used. So in 13a, in the message to which of the seven churches was there mention of the hour of trial that's about to come on those who dwell on the earth? Philadelphia. Yeah. And then finally 13b, some form of the phrase, those who dwell upon the earth, or you may have a Bible that says the inhabitants of the earth, or you may have the New American Standard that says those who live on the earth. But it's a phrase that occurs 11 times in the book of Revelation. It actually occurs in English one other time, but in that one instance, it represents a different phrase in the original language. So I'm not counting that one. The ones where it's essentially the same phrase are the ones listed here in 13b. 3:10, 6:10, 8:13, 11:10. It's used two times there, 13:8. If you are somebody who went through every one of these passages and you would like to tell us what you found contextually, what did that phrase seem to be talking about, raise your hand. He beat you to it, Josh, but Fred's in third place, and I always like the third place guy. Fred, go. What'd you find?
To me, it has to do with those who are lost.
Yes. In every one of those contexts, it's in a context where it's clearly those who are opposed to God or those who oppose to God's people.
You've got the kingdom. They've been saved by the blood of Christ. They have been made priests. Every person saved by the blood of Christ is a priest in the kingdom. That's one group. Here are those who are persecuted, the earth dwellers. So you've got two groups of people. You've got the kingdom of God being persecuted by the earth dwellers.
In Ephesians chapter 2, Paul says we've been raised up with Christ and made to sit where?
Heavenly places.
Heavenly places. Who's been made to sit in heavenly places? Christians, God's people. Who's not sitting in the heavenly places?
Earth dwellers.
Those who, quote, dwell on the earth. All right. So watch that as we go through the book of Revelation. Okay. Yes, sir.
The
Read it. Read. Yeah, go ahead and read. 17:8. And that's consistent with every one of the other passages. All right. So, questions. Now we're getting into chapter 6 as the seals are being opened. Match the seals on the left with the words on the right. First seal, which word on the right matches it? Yes, Michael.
Conquering.
Yes. Yeah, conquering doesn't sound that bad. There's conquering, you know, various times in history. Somebody conquers somebody. Michael. You want to try all of them without looking? Okay, second seal.
Scarcity, then peace is destroyed in death.
Almost. Try it again.
Scarcity, death, then peace is destroyed.
Almost. You only got one other possibility. Try it again.
Death? Wait, no.
Yeah, no. All right, so... Tell you what, look at chapter 6, verse 3 and read it.
When he opened the second seal, I heard a living creature saying, the second living creature saying, how can another horse ride red? Its riders was permitted to take these from the earth.
Okay, so which goes with the second seal? There you go. So there's conquering, but wait a minute, when there's conquering, that means there's not peace. And then the third seal, look at it.
Scarcity.
And in the fourth seal, death. All right. We could talk at length about the symbolism here. And just to give you an idea, if you look at chapter 6 and the third seal, verse 5, when he broke the third seal, I heard the third living creature saying, come. And I looked, and behold, a black horse. And he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. Can you describe what you picture when it says a pair of scales? Is it like two scales of a fish? Is it like those doctor scales where you stand on it and you move this little thing back? What's it like? Okay, Diane's doing this. You know? All right, so maybe like this, though. So you put something in each side. Okay. And so what do you put in this side? A commodity, like grain. And what's in this side? A standard weight. And so you want 5 ounces of grain. So you put your 5 ounce over here, and boom, now you put grain until the grain evens up. Now you know how much grain do you have over here? 5 ounces. All right, so you know how much to pay. All right, so he says there's somebody with scales, and he's saying a quart of wheat for a denarius and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius. So a denarius... We say this a lot. A denarius or a shilling is a day's wage. You know how we know that? And you know how they know that? Yes. Parable, Matthew chapter 20, where the guy goes out to hire workers in his vineyard. And when he goes out to hire workers to work all day in his vineyard, he agrees to pay them for one day. So based on that, we assume, okay, that looks like that was probably a typical, for common labor, day's wage. If you have to spend you think however much money you make, calculate how much you spend, you earn in a day. Suppose what you earn in a day, it takes that much money to buy a quart of wheat. What would you do? I'll tell you what you'd do. You'd buy barley. because you can get 3 quarts of barley for a day's wage. That's kind of hard times.
The other part is, forget about the why, you can't even afford that.
That's not what he says.
That's not the why.
He says, do not harm the oil and the wine.
Okay, that says do not touch.
Do not touch. Yeah. So I think the idea is that this is not, I mean, this is hard. This is kind of like gas being $5.50 a gallon. This is hard, but it's not the end of the world and I say that both as an expression and also to make a point. He's not describing the end of the world here. It's hard times. But there is oil and there is wine. Some people make a mistake of thinking oil and wine here is meant to be luxury items. I don't believe so. When you go through the Old Testament, oil, what kind of oil? Olive oil is just a staple. They used olive oil like we use... When we were over there, I've told you this before, but when we were over there a couple of years ago, it's been 3 years now, I guess, or something. When you drive around in that part of the world, just like in Lancaster County, you see these little Amish farm stands everywhere. You would see olive stands everywhere. And what? Is it illegal to cut an olive tree down? You'd see hills and hills of olive trees and olive stand. And you go for and you stop at the olive stand, and there's just shelves and shelves and shelves of bottles, jars and jars and jars of all different kinds of olives. And you could buy olives. All right, well, I'm spending too much time here. The point being that when he opens that second, that third seal, there is scarcity. So we've got conquering. We've got lack of peace. And now scarcity. There's famine. And then we've got death on. And when the fourth seal is opened. Is there anything that requires us to view these judgments? This is the second question on this page. Is there anything that requires us to view these judgments taking place sequentially in history? In other words, could they be describing conditions that overlapped one another chronologically? Does it have to be that first there was this, and then there was this, and then there was this? You can see kind of a chronological thing to it. Somebody comes to conquer. A consequence is there's no peace. Another consequence is there's famine. Right now, Russia in Ukraine, and what's happening to the world's grain supply? So you kind of see that similarity, right? But I don't think that we're supposed to look back in history necessarily and say, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. It's talking about hardship that comes. Number three, what phrases do you see in Revelation 1 through 8 that suggest this is a description of judgments to come, but not final universal judgment? Give me a verse and quote the phrase.
Verse 8.
Yep. To kill with the sword. No, let's see. Verse 8. Chapter 6, verse 8.
And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with famine.
There it is. Fourth of the earth. Good, 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 good. So this is not the final universal judgment. This is a fourth of the earth is being affected. A lot of people are dying. You can think of things today that happened. You know, COVID came and a lot of people died. There's also what we just mentioned. Don't hurt the oil and wine. All right, let's go on. Number four, mention again the evidences of persecution that we saw. Just thinking back in the first two chapters, what evidences of persecution did we see? Name one.
John was exiled
on the Isle of Patmos. Name another one. Antipas was killed. Name another one. Tribulation of Smyrna. Yeah, I know your tribulation.
Be faithful unto death.
Be faithful unto death. All right, you got the idea. In chapter 6, as the fifth seal is opened, instead of seeing another aspect of judgment being unleashed, what we see is the souls of saints crying out who've already been killed. So let's read it. Chapter 6, verse 12. And I looked when he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as a fig tree casts its unripe figs when shaken by a great wind. And the sky was split. I'm in the wrong place. I'm in the sixth seal. I need to go back to the fifth seal. Verse 9. When he broke the fifth seal, I saw underneath the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God, because of the testimony which they had maintained. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, wilt thou refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" And there was given to each one of them a robe, a white robe, and they were told that they should rest for a little while longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who were to be killed, even as they had been, should be completed also. So they're crying out for, we've already answered this, what were they crying out for? All right, see if you can answer this. There are seven seals to be opened. We've now opened five of them. How many chapters does it take to get all seven opened from chapter 6 through chapter what? Through chapter 11. Where does the seventh seal begin to be opened? Chapter 8. So in chapter 10, we're in the description of what is seen when what seal has been opened. Let me ask that again. In chapter 10, we are seeing the description of what is seen on the scroll when which seal has been opened?
Seven.
Look at chapter 10 and verse 6. Hold your finger in chapter 6 and verse 10. And it's actually chapter 10 and verse 6. So 6:10 and 10:6. 6:10 and 10:6. 6:10, they say, how long till you do what? Judge are those who killed us. Chapter 10, when the seventh seal has been opened, what does it say at the end of verse 6?
No more delay.
You should connect those. We're working through. They've been told to overcome. But what's going to happen hereafter? The Lord comes and he opens these seals and we start to see there's going to be these judgments coming. And the saints are crying out, but how long till our blood is avenged? And you get to the seventh seal and it's open and the voice says, there's no more delay. Why? We're at the opening of the seventh seal. And there's a lot that's got to happen when that seventh seal is open. Do you get the picture? You understand? Okay. All right. Okay. Yes.
I was just
going to
say,
two and three.
This now is what's going to result from what's going on.
Yeah, this is what God's going to do about what's going on. Chapters 2 and 3, the description of the church is what's going on. Chapters 4 and following, here's what God's going to do about it.
Shortly to come to pass.
All right, number 7. How many verses were devoted to what was seen when the first seal was opened? 2. B, the second seal was opened. How many verses describe that? 2. 3, the third seal was opened. How many?
Two.
The fourth seal was opened. How many? How many?
Two.
The fifth seal was opened. How many?
Three.
The sixth seal was opened. How many? Five. Was it five or six? Was it five? Six. Well, let's see. 12 through 17. So 17 minus 11 is 6. 6 verses. Notice. Two verses, two verses, two verses. We get to the sixth seal, and it's 6 verses. And then we get chapter 7, where there's a pause. And we'll talk about that in a second. Then we get to chapter 8, and the seventh seal is opened. And how many verses describe the opening of the seventh seal, or what's seen when the seventh seal is opened? Well, that's not a fair question. It's not verses, it's chapters. Chapter 8, 9, 10, and 11. Are all describing what's seen when the seventh seal is opened. So, 2 verses for the sixth seal, for first seal, 2 verses for the second seal, 2 verses for the third seal, 2 verses for the fourth seal, 3 verses for the fifth seal, 6 verses for the sixth seal. Pause. Now the seventh seal is open and you have 4 chapters describing it. Last question on this page. In the description of these judgments, do you see a sense of increasing severity and do you see a sense of building to a climax? I would say just in the amount of information associated with the opening of each seal. 2 verses, 2 verses, 2 verses. And then finally, 4 chapters you see building to a climax. But what else do you see? Look at the description of what is seen when the sixth seal is opened, starting in chapter 6, verse 12. All right, this is what I mistakenly started reading a moment ago. I looked when he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black and as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth. Let's pause right there. Does that sound dramatic? Is it meant to sound dramatic? Is it meant to sound like a big deal? Is it meant to sound like a bigger deal than the conquering that we heard when the first seal was opened? Have we ever seen this kind of language in other places in the Bible? Like where?
Acts 2.
Acts 2 is a quotation of Joel 2, which is one of the places that we see this language. And in Joel 2, that's probably the last one we need to look at.
The
Isaiah 13 on Babylon. When Babylon, look at Isaiah 13 real quickly. Look at Isaiah 13 verses 8 and 10, 8, 9, and 10 real quickly. We're going to be out of time here, and I do have to finish this lesson tonight. Isaiah chapter 13. You probably have a heading in your Bible that tells you chapter 13 is about judgment on whom? And if you flip through the next few chapters, you'll see judgments on various nations, Moab and Philistines and Assyria and Damascus and Ethiopia. But in chapter 13, verse 1, it's the oracle concerning Babylon. Look at verse 17. Who's he going to bring against the Babylonians? The Medes. Historically, we know what happened to the Babylonians. Who defeated them? The Medes and the... And we also know what year that happened, historically. What year did that happen? 539 B.C., 539 years before Christ, what's prophesied in Isaiah 13 happened. Look at how it's described in verse 6. It's called a what at the very beginning of verse 6? Day of the Lord. And it's going to come as what at the end of verse 6? Destruction. Look down at verse 9. What is it that's coming? And it's going to be cruel with fury and burning anger. And then verse 10, it's described in the following terms. Somebody read verse 10.
For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. Sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light.
Yep. So you see that language there, and obviously in the context, it's talking about the fall of Babylon when the Medes and the Persians came against it 539 years before Christ. The moon, stars, sun, all going dark. All right, that's powerful language. Would it make sense for me to read Isaiah 13 talking about the destruction of Babylon and all of a sudden say, oh, he must be talking about the end of the universe? No. Why does he use that language? What does that language connote?
Your world is
going to
be rocked.
Your world, we're going to rock your world. That's a good expression. It's also darkness is associated with it. It's a dark day. I always, you know, two illustrations in American history. September 11th, 2001 was a dark day in American history, right? And December 7th, 1941 was a dark day in American history. What was the weather like at Pearl Harbor that Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941? What was the weather in New York City, September 11th, 2001? Why do we call it a dark day?
Because of what happened.
The lights went out, so to speak. The end of your world, so to speak. We are not as poetic as people of those times in that part of the world were. It's not enough to say, it's going to be a dark day. You have to say, the sun's going to go out, the stars are going to go out, the moon's going to go out. That same language is used of Egypt, what God did to Egypt in Ezekiel chapters 30 through 32. Similar language, not exactly the same, is used in Joel 2 of what God was going to do to Judah. It's used in Zephaniah. It's used in Matthew chapter 24 of what God did to Jerusalem. So let's go back to Revelation chapter 6, though. But you listen to this language, and you just think about how it's building from what we saw when the first seal was opened, the second seal. Listen to this, verse 14. Quickly.
To show this isn't the end of the world, the final judgment, it says Babylon will never again be settled as long as generations go after generations.
That, yeah.
Generations continue after the sun.
So you're back in Isaiah 13. Right, good. Okay, now let's look at Revelation chapter 6, and I'm going to start in verse 14. The sky was split apart like a scroll when it is rolled up. Picture that. Every mountain and island were moved out of their places, and the kings of the earth and the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the... Do you see the point that I keep making? When the scroll is open, the seals are being revealed. These are judgments of God coming upon the enemies of God's people. And as the sixth seal is opened, you see the people crying out upon whom this judgment is coming. Save us from the wrath of the Lamb. You see that? Okay. Now, chapter 7. Chapter 7. We've seen seven seals open. We haven't seen the seven seals opened. We've seen six seals opened. There's only one more. Wow, that's a bad mistake. How many of you caught that when you're doing this lesson? Said, wait a minute, this is not right. Nobody caught that? You didn't catch that?
We didn't get that lesson.
Michael's got it. You have it? How many of you have this lesson? Okay. Well, we're going to do it. We have seen six seals opened. There's only one more. But before the last seal is opened, there's a pause. So we have to read this because we haven't read it. So let's go to chapter 7, verse 1. After this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth so that no wind should blow on the earth or on the sea or on any tree. So the angels are doing what? Put it in your own words. Preventing what? Preventing?
Destruction.
That would come as a result of winds.
Shortly.
Okay. So the angels are restraining the... Okay, somebody just say the whole sentence for me in your own words or the words that I just put in your mouth. What are the angels doing?
Restraining the events,
especially of the seventh seal. I think it's the seventh one. I think it's the seventh one. I'll show you why in just a moment. All right, let's read on. Chapter 7, verse 1, the middle of the verse. So that no wind should blow on the earth or on the sea or on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun, having the seal of the living God. In other words, he's got the authority of God. This is the seal in the sense of authority. And he cried out with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea. So the angels who are restraining the winds, what is their job to do? To harm. In other words, their job is going to be to let those winds go, but not yet. Good. Verse 3, saying, do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the bondservants of our God on their foreheads. And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 sealed from every tribe of the sons of Israel. All right, picture. Earth, four corners, four angels, each one holding a wind. Those winds are ready to blow everything apart. But before they let go of the winds, 144,000 are sealed. Number 9, what's about to be unleashed upon the earth? Wind. Number 10, four angels are doing what until the servants of God are sealed? Number 11, read Ezekiel 9, where the prophet Ezekiel sees a vision in anticipation of the then coming judgment of God upon Jerusalem. Ezekiel's talking about a judgment that came upon Jerusalem 600 years before Jesus. And in his vision, in Ezekiel 9, he sees the city of Jerusalem. And he sees these men with destroying weapons coming through the city to destroy. But there's also a person with an inkhorn, a writing utensil, with them. And he comes through, and before the executioners, the men with the weapons, go to work destroying the city, the man with the writing utensil goes through and marks the forehead of all those who have abhorred idolatry, those who are faithful to God. And then when the executioners start destroying, what was the purpose of marking those who abhorred idolatry? Nope. Spare them. Is that what you said? Oh, I thought you said kill them. Not to kill them. Okay. Can you think of another time, number 12, can you think of another time in history when God brought a series of judgments, kind of like we're seeing six seals open, judgment, 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 judgment. Now the seventh, but before we get to seventh, God's going to identify his people and protect them. Can you think of another time in history, Michael? Pharaoh. How many judgments, if you wanted to count them, how many? 10. After the ninth one, what did God do? Marked his people. How were they marked? Blood of the Lamb. And then the 10th, one. And when the 10th one came, would you say that was the climactic one that Pharaoh said, I'll let you go? Yeah. You see that same thing here in Revelation chapter 6. Pause. Mark God's people. And then chapter 7. We'll pick it up there next time.
What about Matthew 24, before the judgment came upon Jerusalem to collect our people again?
Okay, good. All right. Okay, I'll look into what lesson. So these, let me see here. These were on the... I did give it to you? Okay. All right. Yeah, they were on the... Yeah, I should have announced it Sunday. I thought everybody... I put about 25 out there. There were only three left, so... All right. I gotta communicate better.
Also, you took my homework from last week. I spent 20 minutes looking for it last night, and you put it over here, and I don't know what happened to it.
The dog ate it. I'll see. I probably got it on my desk. I'll see if I can find it. See who needs that, those, and hand those out.
Who wants a hard copy right there?
Huh?
Is the world flat?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you got four corners. This passage proves it. That's what we should get out of the book of Revelation. Joe. Joe's looking for one. Joe, I'll email it out, and I'll put it online. I'll send an email out with a link to where